You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Live from Chicken Town, this is the Flopcast, episode 423.
On Flopcast.net.
Yes, yes. Hello, Cornflake.
Hi, Kevin. What's up?
Oh, you know, we're back. We're here. Things are horrible and horrifying, and the world is burning, but the Flopcast goes on. How you doing?
It's hard not to react to the fact that the world is horrible, but I'm happy to be here with you right now, Kevin.
At least we have coffee. I have coffee. Do you have coffee?
I have my coffee. I have a flavored iced coffee this week, Kevin. I've gone way off the deep end. Yes, I know.
Weird. Ugh. Dare I ask what flavor?
Strawberry cheesecake.
What?
Yeah.
I'm not sure I can do the show. We might have to stop. I can't even process this.
I have key lime pie flavored coffee lined up for next week.
That really sounds disgusting. Glad to hear that you're still chugging down the coffee over there, even though it's...
horrifying.
Not unlike the world, your coffee is horrifying and weird. But on we go. Cornflake, what do you have for National Whatever Day?
What I have is a little bending of the rules for this week, Kevin. If I had my act together, we would have been celebrating this last year, and somehow I missed it. So it's a celebrity birthday. It's not exactly a milestone. It's a happy 71st birthday, and I hope you'll permit that, Kevin.
Usually your birthday whatever days land on it's an age ending in a 0 or a 5. But this is 71.
I couldn't resist.
You've made this exception before. You bent your rules in honor of Phoebe Cates a few months ago.
I think I might have, yes.
We could not wait to celebrate Phoebe Cates. All right, well, who are we bending the rules for today?
I think you'll agree that this is a worthy rule bend. We're talking about Lionel Brockman Richie Jr., as in Lionel Richie.
Well, you know, I'm always ready to celebrate Lionel Richie, so sure. All right, he's 71. I guess that checks out. That sounds about right.
Yeah, June 20th, he turned 71. And it's not as if we haven't talked about Lionel Richie on the show before.
Oh, we certainly have, but I'm always up for more Lionel talk. I kind of think about Lionel Richie all the time. You know, between the Hello video... with the girl making the Lionel head out of clay. You know I'm obsessed with that clay head from the Hello video. And between that and the dancing on the ceiling and the Commodores stuff, we are the world, and the guy just did it all. So, yeah, we're sort of obsessed.
For me, it's dancing on the ceiling I'm almost always thinking about. And Lady.
Lady, sure. Going back to... I was thinking of Lady You Bring Me Up by the Commodores. Do you mean Lady, the song he wrote for Kenny Rogers?
Yes.
Okay. There's also a once, twice, three times a lady, right?
That's true. There's a lot of lady stuff going on.
So many ladies surrounding Lionel Richie, plus one ballerina girl.
Oh, her too. And the penny lover. I presume the penny lover was a she.
Penny lover may have been a she. I don't know. Oh, he had a pile of hit songs. And there was one magic night at Great Woods, our big local outdoor concert venue, where the mayor and I went and we watched Lionel perform them all. In a show he called All the Hits All Night Long.
That is so perfect.
That was the best. Ooh, question. Trivia question.
Yeah.
Speaking of All Night Long, do you know who sang the backup vocals in All Night Long?
Oh, I feel like you've told me this before. Is it DeBarge? Ah!
That's a fine guess. I'm afraid you're going to have to be more specific. Was it L. DeBarge or was it Chico DeBarge? No. It was, in fact, Richard Marx.
Oh, yes, you have told me this. I forgot. I learned something else about All Night Long that I don't think I've ever realized before. Did you know this? The music video for the song was directed by Mike Nesmith.
No, I don't think I knew that. Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
Fantastic Lionel Richie trivia. What about there's a Commodores video where they're all like running around playing soccer or something? It's like all the Commodores are in a field wearing little tiny shorts. That's a good one.
The Commodores were so cool.
I think Peter Tork directed that one.
You could be right.
Or possibly Chico DeBarge. I don't know what was happening back then. Anyway, happy birthday to one of the greats of the 70s and 80s and beyond. Our favorite, Lionel Richie. That's a good one. Happy 71st.
Happy 71st, Lionel.
And we have a little 80s music talk coming up later on in the show, I believe, as is often the case around here. But before we get to that, anything else happening in your world this week?
I survived a lobster avalanche.
Lobster avalanche.
I did.
Is that the name of your follow-up album?
Maybe. It was 5:40 in the morning. I woke up. Things were falling on me. You know, I have a collection of lobsters, Kevin. People over the years have given me a collection of lobster paraphernalia.
Yeah, I sort of sang backup on a song you wrote about that very subject. So yeah, I am familiar.
I have had that paraphernalia all up on a shelf, and I thought the shelf was pretty sturdy. But it gave out on one morning recently, and I woke up and I was being pelted by lobsters.
All right.
Evidently, I've hit a point where I have so many lobsters that it's getting hard to contain them. So
I guess.
Yeah. I had to do a little bit of rebuilding and get the lobsters all back in order.
But you put them all back where they were, just precariously balanced the giant mound of them directly over your head where you sleep. That's where you keep them.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, that's good. Good plan.
Well, if they ever fall again, I'll know what's going on because I've been through it now.
That's right.
So, yeah, we're all okay. I thought you should know.
There were no survivors.
The lobster avalanche. How about with you?
You know, I left the house a couple days ago. For the first time in 3 months, I went somewhere besides this studio or the supermarket. Literally, I've been inside two buildings in the last 3 months. I finally went somewhere else. It was Rubber Chicken Comics.
Oh.
Our regular local comic book shop. They've been closed for several weeks, obviously. And yeah, Rubber Chicken reopened this week. So I went down there. I've got my face mask, because obviously you're going to walk inside a building these days. You got to wear a mask.
Right.
Masks are required at the Chicken. Now, which mask to wear? Well, that was an easy decision because the mayor of Chickentown wrangled for us a couple of Rubber Chicken face masks, which I believe you can get from Archie McPhee. Those mad geniuses of weird products out in Seattle over at Archie McPhee. They're selling...
We love them.
Rubber Chicken face masks. Oh, we've gotten so much Rubber Chicken stuff from them over the years. So it's a face mask with a picture of like the head of a rubber chicken on it. But the rubber chicken on the face mask is also wearing a face mask.
Wow. I think you get triple style points for accessorizing that way, Kevin.
It's quite remarkable. So that's how I showed up. And yeah, there's the gang down at Rubber Chicken. And I realized as I walked up to the store, because there are a couple of regulars were hanging around outside the shop. You can't have a crowd inside the shop. And then I realized these are the first people outside my house. These are the first people that I recognize that I've seen in person in 3 months. It was the gang at Rubber Chicken, which was strangely appropriate.
Oh, that's really nice.
Yeah, so that was good. So I went inside, and man, there's a pile of stuff waiting for me in there. Jay had like $100 worth of stuff for me waiting inside. Got some good stuff. There's a new magazine. Well, it started like, I don't know, a year or two ago, called Retro Fan Magazine.
What was that?
That's our kind of magazine, you know. It's from the same people that make Back Issue Magazine, which is about comic books of the 70s and 80s. And Retro Fan is not strictly about comic books. It's a magazine about everything else and any kind of pop culture stuff from like the 60s, 70s, 80s, especially. There were two issues of Retro Fan waiting for me. So one of them has, there's an article about Mad Magazine in here. There's a big article about Electro Woman and Dyna Girl, favorites of mine. So that's very exciting. You know, I do a podcast about Electro Woman and Dyna Girl.
That's true. You're on that with
with John from the Batcave podcast.
Yeah.
We've only done 3 episodes so far over the past couple of years. We're spacing them out because they only made 8 episodes. We've covered the first 3, and sometime soon, hopefully, we'll get to episode 4. That'll be good. But then now the latest issue of Retro Fan Magazine I have here, issue number 9. There's a big article about the Saturday morning cartoon preview shows. Like, remember on Friday nights?
Oh, yeah.
They did the preview show. Here's the new shows for the fall, kids. There's a big article going, like, year by year through the Saturday morning cartoon preview shows. There's an article about coloring books in here. All kinds of stuff. 8-track tapes they cover in this issue.
Oh, neat.
And Cornflake cover featured. The main image on the cover of Retro Fan number 9 is someone who's been a guest on the Flopcast.
So what?
Oh, yeah. You know all the stars come out to join us here on the Flopcast. It's Chico DeBarge.
Chico DeBarge.
No, wait, it's not Chico DeBarge. And also, Chico DeBarge was never on the Flopcast. My mistake. But no, Retro Fan number 9, Cornflake, it's in his 1979 Captain America costume. It's Reb Brown.
Well, yeah. Well, Reb Brown, I remember. I was racking my brain to try to figure out when Chico DeBarge was on our show. Thanks a lot, Kevin. But I do remember Reb Brown.
You totally remember when we had Reb Brown here on the Flopcast. And yeah, they've got a big interview with Reb here in Retrofan. So yeah, I've got to dive into these magazines that I just picked up at the newly reopened Rubber Chicken. So yeah, as places are opening up, you know, be careful, everybody. They're allowing some businesses to open up now, but still got to use your head and wear your mask, keep your distance, please. Mm. But go out and get your Reb Brown magazines.
Hey, that doesn't sound like a half bad idea. There are places opening that I love and I miss, but...
Yeah, just because something has reopened does not, I mean, you want to support places when you can, but
right.
In general, we still should not be going anywhere.
Yes. I have a list and I'm getting ready, though.
Excellent. I have a list for you right now.
Oh, do you now?
Yeah. Well, I got a thing. You know, one of those goofy things people do online in their social media and whatnot is people are nominating each other to list 10 albums that influenced their taste in music. Have you seen these things going around?
I have, and I'm glad that this is the one that you're talking about, because I thought for sure you were about to hit me with the ice bucket challenge, and I was just going to be like, no way. But...
It's a timely reference out of Cornflake, going back to... What was that, like 5 years ago? Had that ice bucket challenge joke in your back pocket for half a decade now, and we just broke it out tonight.
I've been waiting.
Anyway, my friend Jim just suggested that I share 10 albums, and then I thought, well, if I'm going to do this, let's do it on the Flopcast, you know?
That sounds like a great idea.
Where every week we have time to burn. So this is for Jim. Jim, by the way, my friend Jim, an original founding member of the Sponge Awareness Foundation.
Huh?
From back before it was even a band.
Oh, wow.
You know my band, the Sponge Awareness Foundation. It's been around so long that originally it wasn't even a band. And Jim was a member. Later, he was also a member when we were a band. He joined us on stage at least a couple of times playing saxophone.
That's really cool.
Yeah, yeah. Well, here we go, Cornflake. Here's what I did. I made a list of 10 albums, and I decided to restrict myself to the 1980s and to one album for each year of the 80s. That's what I did. I also decided I'm not going to repeat any artists. So 10 different artists, 10 albums, one for each year of the 80s. That's what I got. And here's what I thought we'd do, because nobody wants to hear me pontificate about this stuff anymore. You've heard how I can go on and on about Lionel Richie,
yes,
remember?
Yes, I have.
From 10 minutes ago. So we don't want to have to suffer through that 10 more times just tonight. So I'm going to toss out each album, and then we're going to throw it over to you.
I've not seen this list.
No.
I have not prepared for this
no.
in the slightest.
Just whatever you want to say about the artist or the album, have at it. I'm going to try to shut up for the most part.
Why do I get the feeling that's going to pain you?
even if you say something completely wrong, you can make up whatever crazy thing you want to say. I am not going to correct or object to anything you say.
Okay, anything, including total rubbish, goes.
Yes.
All right.
So no pressure.
Get it.
Let's do this. Here is the 10 album challenge for Jim, 1980s edition, one per year, and starting in 1980, this was maybe my most difficult choice of this whole thing was for 1980, because I really, really wanted to go with REO Speedwagon High Infidelity. It's almost a coin toss, but I gotta give the nod to Billy Joel, Glass Houses.
Of course you have to give the nod to Billy Joel. We've talked on the show about how growing up, Billy Joel was my first crush. I had family members who would convince me that they got Billy Joel on the phone for me to talk to him because they knew that I had a crush on him when I was a little kid.
Yeah, I remember this. I remember that at one point we started suspecting that maybe at some point you had secretly married Billy Joel.
Yes.
Because we were trying to count up all his wives over the years, and I think we lost count. Right. And we thought maybe it was you. Who knows?
Which, if he is a spouse of mine, I'm honored that you're bringing up his album, Glass Houses, from 1980.
He is a spouse of mine. Well said.
We're going to go back to Glass Houses. Oh, I know you're not going to correct me if I get this wrong, but I kind of half hope you would. Are we talking about the album that had It's Still Rock and Roll to Me?
Yes, of course we are. And see, now you have to wonder, am I just yes-anding you and you're totally wrong?
Might be.
But assuming you are correct, we may also assume that that was Billy Joel's very first number one song was It's Still Rock and Roll to Me from the Glass Houses album. Moving along, 1981, I was tempted to go with the Go-Go's and Beauty and the Beat, but who are we kidding? We've got to go Air Supply, the one that you love.
I did not have an appropriate level of appreciation for Air Supply until you took me to go see them.
That's my plan, is I'm taking everybody one at a time to an Air Supply concert.
To go see Air Supply.
They're going to win over the entire world, all thanks to me.
I mean, they still sound so good. You know, it doesn't matter that it's super soft rock.
It's super soft rock.
Well, it really is.
That's the official category they fall into.
And yet, when I saw them on the stage, it's kind of gentle music. And yet they do put a lot of drive into their sound.
And their lead singer, Russell Hitchcock, he was very gentle when he started stroking your face, remember?
Still haven't washed that side of my face.
Yeah. Russell touched you. 1982. Here's a goofy one, but 1982, this was such an important album to me. I'm going Buckner and Garcia, Pac-Man Fever.
Video game music, and not just about Pac-Man, interestingly. There are songs on there about Donkey Kong.
Yes, do the Donkey Kong.
There is, and there's a song on there about Dig Dug. And it really surprised me that they did a song about Joust, because I couldn't begin to imagine how you could make content for a song like that. But the video game is classic, and they figured out a way to do it.
Yes. You'll have to teach me the lyrics to those Dig Dug and Joust songs someday, because I don't remember those. I remember the Donkey Kong song, but not Dig Dug. Or I know Dig Dug by Insane Ian. That's a good one.
Oh, maybe it was him that I was thinking of.
I'm constantly mixing up Buckner and Garcia.
Whoops.
And Insane Ian. 1983. Now, 82, were it not for Pac-Man Fever, this is a band I would have picked for 1982. But luckily, they came right back the following year in 83 with another album that was just as great and just as big. I'm going Cargo from Men at Work.
Okay, so this was their big collaboration with Meatloaf that you never would have been able to tell. You never would have been able to tell.
It was the Southern Hemisphere meets the Northern Hemisphere as Men at Work and Meatloaf Together at Last on the Cargo album. Yes.
The influence, the sound is not there. So you're going to have to take my word for it that Meatloaf was in any way, shape, or form involved.
He's way, way buried in the mix on that record. You just have to know that he's there.
Right. It, was that the album? And oh, can I ask this and get a true answer? I don't know. Was that the album that Who Can It Be Now was on?
Who Can It Be Now was the first album, Business as Usual.
Ah, which was the year prior, right?
Yeah, yeah. Cargo was Overkill and Dr. Heckle and Mr. Jive and It's a Mistake.
Oh, It's a Mistake. I remember seeing you perform that with God's Comics.
Oh, that's right. I do belong to a Men at Work cover band called God's Comics. So yeah, we've done all the old Men at Work classics, of course. We always forget to include the Meatloaf parts, though, strangely. 1984. Here's another one that I think you have some familiarity with. For 1984, and this is actually my original vinyl copy of this album, I just had autographed by this artist 2 years ago, I believe. I'm going with the album In 3D from Weird Al Yankovic.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, In 3D was his second album, but it was the first one that I got. And I was just, my head exploded. That was a game changer for me. And then look what happened. Eventually I started writing and performing along with Ed goofy comedy songs of my own. All started with the In 3D album in 84.
Weird Al over the years certainly has enhanced and deepened my appreciation for polka. I'll give you that.
Yeah, there is a polka medley on... this is when his run of polka medleys started. Let's jump to 1985, and I'm going with the Hooters and their classic album, Nervous Night.
Now, leave it to them to make an album that all but one song has something to do with owls. It's a bunch of songs about owls, and then And We Danced.
Yeah, people remember the hit single And We Danced with the melodica and the mandolin and a beautiful classic song. But yeah, the whole rest of the record, why were they so obsessed with owls? You're right.
I have no idea.
Remember on the back cover, if you flip the album over, it was just that big image of Mr. Owl from the Tootsie Pop commercial? That was just a strange choice, I thought.
Maybe that was their influence.
Those guys were obsessed, and still are obsessed, I think. The mayor and I road tripped down to Philadelphia to see the Hooters in concert just a few years ago, because they don't tour in America. You want to see the Hooters, you have to go to Europe or Philadelphia. That's where they play. 1986. Man, I wanted to go with the Bangles.
How did you not go with the Bangles?
Because this whole list is just a big pile of dudes, you know?
Right.
I was trying to be true to the records that were the most important to me at the time. Mm-hmm. And beating out the Bangles in 1986 in my little world, I was way into Bruce Hornsby and The Range and their debut album, The Way It Is.
So much piano. So much glorious piano.
Did you ever wear a Bruce Hornsby costume?
No, but you did.
Yeah, I kind of did. One magic night, one Halloween night a few years back. Yes, I was Bruce Hornsby in the stupidest costume in the history of Halloween. 1987, this was an easy one. Gotta go Midnight Oil, their American breakthrough album, Diesel and Dust.
That, I think it was the songs from that album that introduced me to the voice of their lead singer.
Whose name is? And again, any answer is correct.
Max Headroom. No.
It was Max Headroom, yes. I'm just noticing how very Australian this list is. That was the third Australian act on this list, you realize. Got Air Supply, then Men at Work, and then Midnight Oil. Could Yahoo Sirius be up next? Perhaps. Let's go to 1988. And, oh, no, actually, this is, I went with the album Lincoln, which was the first record I got by They Might Be Giants.
It would take me until the early 90s to get into They Might Be Giants. So Lincoln was a little bit before my time, and I don't think I personally acquired Lincoln until the early 2000s. Mm-hmm. If I am recalling correctly, Lincoln was named for Lincoln, Massachusetts, which is around where John and John from They Might Be Giants grew up. Now, were they doing Dial-A-Song back in the days of Lincoln?
Oh, Dial-A-Song goes back to the very beginning of the band. Yeah, they had their Dial-A-Song answering machine service up and running very early on. Absolutely. I used to call it.
I called it recently. You can still call it.
Oh, wow. I haven't called it in like 30 years. These days, I only call Colin Oates. The Hall & Oates song request hotline. Colin Oates. I love it. Sadly, no Hall & Oates albums made my list, though. There just wasn't room. But let's push forward to the final year of the 80s for 1989. Again, this was an easy one. No contest. Cornflake, Elvis Costello, and the Spike album.
I can't believe he had so many different guest writers for his songs on this album. And yet...
Oh, I was not aware of that.
Yeah, they still have the signature Elvis Costello sound.
Huh. So who really wrote all the songs on Spike? This is news to me.
It was a wild combination. It just happens that Elvis Costello has a lot of friends. But it's rumored that Frank Oz... As in from the Muppets, helped him write.
The Muppet guy?
Yeah.
Okay. He wrote Veronica?
You'd never guess. You did guess. I was going to say, you'd never guess which song he helped Elvis Costello write. And Tina Turner also helped him write the songs for this album.
Wasn't this around the same time that Elvis started dressing like Tina Turner and he put on the big wigs and everything? That was the late 80s, I think. He went through that phase. Yeah, so that makes sense.
And because he took that approach to making this album, he made something that everybody would like.
Yeah. Well, Cornflake, that covers the 80s. There's my list of 10 albums from the 80s, which I assumed correctly that you were an expert on all of them. So that worked out.
Yeah, I remember the 80s super well.
We should do this again, but how about if you... pick your 10 albums. Give me a decade. What, do you want to go 90s?
90s, for sure.
Let's send Cornflake back to the 90s, come up with your list, and I will provide you with all sorts of fascinating facts and figures about your 10 favorite 90s albums. Let's do that maybe next week, unless we're too sleepy. We'll see.
All right.
But meanwhile, for this week, Cornflake, let's just wrap up the stupid Flopcast.
Let's wrap up the Flopcast. Okay. Flopcast.net is our website. Facebook.com/Flopcast is another place you'll find us on the internet. We're also at Flopcast on Twitter and the_Flopcast on the old IG, as the kids call it, or Instagram, if you will.
Yes. And oh, one quick plug before we get out of here. And that is, you know, our friends from the Dragon Con American Sci-Fi Classics track have been doing online convention style panels. I joined them for episode 9 of the Classic Track Quarantine panel just this week. We did another round of Classic Sci-Fi Court. So I was back in court to defend another terrible movie. Because that's the concept, is we have a bunch of defense attorneys mounting a defense for movies that are generally considered to be not the best movies.
It is always fun to hear you in Sci-Fi Court.
These are goofy, fun shows. And this week, we had Joe and Gary there, of course, the track directors. And Joe is the judge. He's wearing his big red judge's robe and judging us all and banging on the gavel. And we had Gary was there. Gary defended Starship Troopers. Darren was there as well, defending Doom, which I was not familiar with. But this was Doom based on the video game.
Right.
Starring The Rock, I believe. Then we had a new guy. New guy joined us, a guy named Sherman, and he was there to talk about Krull, another weird classic 80s science fiction fantasy sort of movie. So that was cool to have Sherman hop aboard with the rest of us maniacs. And I mounted my defense of Lost in Space, the 1998 movie version of Lost in Space. We had a crazy fun time, as always, in Classic Sci-Fi Court. If you missed us live, which was last night as we record this, but if you missed that, it's still around. You can watch the whole thing. The DragonCon American Sci-Fi Classics Track Facebook page, you can watch it there. And they also have a YouTube channel, and I believe by the time you hear this, it'll probably be on YouTube as well. We will throw up links to find that show. All right, anyway, Cornflake, that's enough of us yammering on and on for this week. Hey, kids, remember, please, please be safe. Please be kind. Take care of each other. Use your brains. Be careful. Keep in touch. We'll see you next week.
Peace and cookies.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
And we're here on the station surviving the coronavirus. Since you guys are probably quarantined there down on Earth, I'll let you know, we got DC news, comics, television shows we're going to be talking about every week. Come join us every week on the Earth Station DCU podcast here on the ESO Network.
Okay. Hey, Secret After Show. Hello.
Oh, hey.
This is the Flopcast Secret. We didn't do a Secret After Show last week. It was such a weird show last week that we didn't even really want to do a Secret After Show. And so we didn't. I think that's the first Flopcast without a Secret After Show since we started doing Secret After Shows.
Well, I guess it's good to have it back.
Now we're back. I'm just flipping through my pile of stuff from Rubber Chicken Comics here. In addition to those retro fan magazines, I also have the latest issue of Back Issue magazine, which again, it's all about the Bronze Age of comics. That's pretty much the 70s and 80s in comic books. And the latest issue, it's all about the Guardians of the Galaxy.
My fave.
So that'll be fun. Now, this is comic book Guardians of the Galaxy. Very, very different from the movies over the years. And I know very little about the Guardians of the Galaxy, their history at Marvel. I think they started in the 70s, I think. And even on the cover, I only recognize the blue dude. Yondu? Is that his name? Micah Rooker?
Yondu.
Yeah, that's the only recognizable from the movies member of the Guardians of the Galaxy on the cover.
I could actually add something about Yondu.
Yeah? What you got?
Well, you haven't seen it yet because I got this just before everything went into lockdown, but I got a new vehicle, Kevin. Brand new car, and it's blue, and I named it Yondu.
Well, that makes sense. Does it have a mohawk?
Yes, my car has a mohawk.
It does. I knew it.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at ESONetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.